This is Guy Bogart and our cats, mindful of his promise last week to share another evening with Alan DeVoe, whose book from the McGraw-Hill Company, Our Animal Neighbors, we enjoyed. In the September American Mercury, he writes, quote, "The Abbot and the Tiger." Both the publishers and Mr. DeVoe permit us to quote this copyrighted feature, and so, as time permits, here is Alan DeVoe. A friend of mine who has spent years in India was telling me a while ago about a monastery in a cedar-fragrant forest in the Himalayan foothills. There are many tigers in the area, he says, but the monks are not afraid. Love, they think, can cast out fear and invite in return love instead of hate. So they are friends of the tigers and talk to them comrade-wise. What my friend swears he has seen is the abbot going out on the veranda in his yellow robe in the dusk and talking tiger talk in his benevolent old voice until out of the jungle a great striped cat comes padding and presently purrs under his stroking hand like a kitten. It's hard to believe, but I wonder. It was on a hot summer afternoon that I found the mourning dove, disabled and gasping in the dust beside our little country road. It fluttered in a spasm of terror as I stooped to it and struggled with all its crippled strength as I held it in my hand. I took it home and put it in a red lacquered bamboo cage, preempted from its status as an antique and dust catcher, with a dish of fresh water and seeds and berries. In 8 days, nature had restored her dove to health, the soft plumage sleek as ever, the wild eyes gleaming. My wife and I made a slow, sorrowful excursion, cage in hand, up the old wood road that climbs the hill behind our house. In a quiet birch copse, the cage was opened. Our dove darted out and in an instant had risen on rushing wings, circled the treetops, and rejoined the freedom of the wild. So we thought for over a week. Then one morning I was sitting on an old stump engrossed in watching a hollow where a family of white-footed mice were living. Suddenly, out of nowhere, a winged shape fluttered down to me, perched on my forearm, clutching it as trustfully as it might grasp a branch in a friendly woods, was a shimmering mourning dove. It stayed only a few seconds, infinitely close and comradely. Then it was off, this time forever. I never saw it again. Though a dove has a wild, shy spirit, it is not a fierce, feral thing like a tiger. But there was the fox in the winter woods. When I told about that fox in a book, I wondered whether he could seem believable. Then the reader's letters came to tell me of other fox encounters in other woods. My fox was not unique. I jumped him on a bitter winter morning among the snow-bowed hemlocks where he had been sleeping in a drift. He whirled up perhaps 30 feet ahead of me in a spume of flying snow, and we stared at each other motionless in the wintry silence. We stood so long that it began to seem unreal and eerie. Why didn't he run? Foxes have every hand against them, every country gun and dog. Their hearts have a permanent savage wariness, ingrained, we say. When I couldn't stand our queer tableau any longer, I shied a dead hemlock stick at the peak-eared form confronting me. It dropped short in the fluffy snow. My fox ran then, all right. He ran toward me in great bounding leaps, pounced upon the fallen stick, and with the head-high prance of a happy coolie, went dancing off into the woods, his treasure gripped tightly in his narrow jaws. Foxes are savagely wary, but this one, on a bitter morning, confided to me a strange and unsuspected secret. Deep down, under all the fear, he'd like to be a dog. I confess that after telling that fox tale in my book, I was a little worried. Would it sound like a tall tale? I needn't have worried. The other day I had a letter from a game warden out west saying that a similar adventure once befell him. One fox and one dove don't make a case. What hints at something substantial is that hosts of witnesses have similar stories to tell. all testifying in various ways to a bond of affection that can exist between the wild animals and men. We may think of the adventures of Androclus and his lion as only a distant, doubtful story, but there abound, it turns out, true tales that are just as surprising and just as eloquent of the impulses deep in wild hearts toward affection and gratitude. There is no animal in the woods that is meaner, if you like, than a wildcat. Certainly no animal that would seem less likely to turn trustfully to a human being. So it seemed to Phil Traubend, and so improbable was his adventure even after it had happened, that he kept it to himself for years for fear his cronies among the Oklahoma hunters and fishermen would laugh at him. He confided it to me recently. He'd been hiking through a clearing of tall grass at the edge of a blackjack timber when he heard behind him what sounded like a baby crying. As he entered the timber, the cry came again, closer, with a feline edge to it. He turned around. There, padding in soft-footed pursuit of him, was a wildcat. He admits he was scared for a minute, but then something in him responded to what seemed to his incredulous eyes to be a note of appeal. He stood still and let the big cat approach. He had never before looked, he had never expected to look, close into a lynx's eyes. What he saw in the eyes of this one as it came close touched his heart. Unmistakably, it was the look of a brother's spirit beseeching help. Traubend saw that the wild cat's mouth and muzzle were swollen. He squatted down, took the fearsome head between his hands, and gently pried open the mouth. One of the lynx's great canine fangs had somehow pierced its tongue and held it fast. The wound had become infected. As gently as he could, but it still must have been excruciating, Traubend worked loose the swollen tongue tissue from the impaling fang. All the while, his legs were tensed and ready to run. They needn't have been. The wildcat stood quietly without a whimper until the operation was over. Then, for several seconds more, it stood motionless, relaxed in grateful relief, while the cautious hand of a still incredulous man stroked the tawny, grizzled back tenderly. With a final roar, the big cat slipped away into the woods to resume its life a being, as we may think, incurably alien and enemy. The beloved naturalist Ernest Harold Baines didn't believe that any animal in the world is really incurably hostile to us. Baines did something that 1,000 authorities had sworn couldn't be done. He made pets, or guests, as he liked to call them, with a sensitive naturalist dislike of the patronizing quality in pets, of a pair of timber wolves. He acquired them as small cubs from the wolf den in a zoological garden. One of the wolves, named Death, he kept only until near maturity. But the other great wolf, Dauntless, was his affectionate comrade for years. Baines treated Dauntless as he would treat a dog. Despite the dyer's predictions, the naturalist fed his gigantic friend raw meat, tramped the woods and fields with him, enjoying serenely Dauntless's terrifying displays of special affection, consisting of taking Baines' cheek gently in his teeth and fondly nibbling it. Dauntless appeared with Baines on lecture platforms. On several occasions, Baines perpetrated the amiable joke of entering him in dog shows. Dauntless was all wolf and looked frightening enough to be pursuing a fleeing Dronsky through the Siberian snow, but his heart was as devoted as his teeth were terrible. He died full of years of natural causes. Baines tamed many other improbable animals, foxes, a bear, a bison, and that notably vicious animal, a big buck deer. He didn't think of it as taming, though, which is perhaps why his successes were so astounding. He thought of it just as going out of the human heart in love to enlist the natural love deep planted in wild hearts, too. The Africa of Albert Schweitzer is a savage jungle, and Dr. Schweitzer's Lambourine Hospital only a tiny speck of humanness amid the encompassing wilderness of tropical nature. But it is a speck that shines and glows with the great medical missionary's central faith, reverence for all life, even the humblest, even the fiercest. To that radiance of faith and affection, jungle creatures have responded in a way to amaze visitors. The night watchman at Dr. Schweitzer's door is an awesome-looking African pelican. Years ago, it swooped down on a native woman, thinking to secure a fish from her. Frightened, she struck at it frantically with a paddle, breaking one of its legs and crippling a wing. Schweitzer rescued the pelican, healed its hurts, and set it free. But it would not leave him, even for all the tug of its ancestral blood. It had been tugged by something greater. Night after night, the huge bird perches over the doctor's door, watching, protecting. If that pelican has surprised visitors, a wild boar has left them scarcely believing their eyes. You can't tame a wild African boar, but a wild boar, it may be, can tame itself, can respond, that is, to anything so ineffably strange and unexpected as finding itself cherished. Dr. Schweitzer was not afraid to cherish the savage, ungainly hog that he adopted and called by the preposterously elfin name of Josephine. A weird sight presently became familiar in the little world of Lambourine. A wild boar running eagerly each Sunday when the mission bell sounded to the corrugated iron barrack that served Dr. Schweitzer as his chapel. For years, while a man of God talked in his simple way of the love of God, a warty-snouted, wicked-eyed old tusker stood beside him. Ernest Thompson Seton was convinced, and the conviction grew ever the deeper during his 86 years of knowing the outdoors, that no animal is natively afraid of man. Thus, no animal natively hates man, for it is only in the dark places of fear that hate breeds. If there is the rage of terror in wild hearts, there is also, if hidden, secret, shy, the original essence of a potential that might have become love and trust. Perhaps the abbot talks to tigers out of a full and guileless soul, and they purr for him, or perhaps they don't, I'm not sure. But again and again at the heart of wild things, naturalists and outdoor men have found the essential secret of that story. The name of the secret is love, and it lies hidden and wanting. This is Guy Bogart with love and joy to each of you, and happy purrs.